You're listening to the Diary of a Head Teacher. This week I was delighted to be joined by Brian, who has worked as a head teacher at two different schools, being a school inspector, and now advises senior leaders on school improvement. Over the course of our conversation, Brian shares how he inspired communities to understand the power of education and explains the importance of schools focusing on their own needs rather than worrying about Ofsted. I really enjoyed sitting down to chat with Brian, and I know you will find his insights invaluable. So Brian, you've worked as a head teacher and you've worked since then with school leaders. But what for you is your earliest memory of being at school yourself?
It would probably be in nursery as a child at my nursery school in Hull, where I grew up and went to nursery. And I think we were taught by a lovely old teacher, and I can vaguely remember the rocking horse, and I can remember playing in the water and running around outside. I think I would have been the age of 3 or 4.
Okay, and what were you like as a child at school? Was education something you enjoyed? Did you like being at school?
I think, yes, on balance, I did. I think it varied according to my levels of maturity and levels of interest. I think there were occasions, perhaps in primary school, where I was more interested in football and tried to pursue a professional football career. Sadly, that didn't happen. But certainly when I got older and into secondary school, I became more focused and I had a direction that I wanted to go in. Then I think I started to take education more seriously. And I found particular teachers were really helpful and inspirational in that journey.
Did you find, I guess, I suppose in finding your own passions and that kind of being connected to, I suppose, like you said, staff members that you work with, did that then shape how you were when you became a leader yourself? Did you kind of have in mind, were you kind of actively inspirational? Do you think was that something that you tried to inspire in your staff, that kind of awareness of the impact they have on children?
Yeah, I think it was. I always wanted to do something that helped other people, and teaching was a way of doing that. I think it was at about the age of 16 or 17, we had to do a placement, and I spent 2 weeks in the school, and I was quite ambivalent about it at that age, but actually when I got in, I really enjoyed it and really saw the power of what education can do. And I really thought about opportunities, really, and the opportunities that education gives you. And I always thought quite at a young age, really, about how fantastic it is that we have free education in this country. I had some friends at school who came from Bangladesh and India, and they took education very seriously. They couldn't understand anybody who would mess about. So sometimes that was a little bit of a leveler for me in terms of maturity. But then the opportunity to go into this particular school and help other people and give them the gift and power of education. So I think as a leader, that was something I always tried to instill, probably with varying amounts of success. But it was certainly something I always tried to instill in people, that education in this country is free. Education has the power to change, has the power to really reform, not into social engineer or anything like that, but it is the one thing that it can do to inspire and be a lifelong thing, that, you know, learning isn't just confined at school. And certainly within my own teaching, certainly when I had older children, I used to always say to them, the day always ends in a question mark and never in a full stop. And it was always to try to inspire to the children that learning just doesn't stop at the school gates, that learning can happen all the time. It's organic, it's lifelong. And I've found that was really good and really important for some children. I particularly enjoyed teaching maths when I was a primary school teacher. That was really my favourite thing to teach, that and PE. And I found out fairly recently, I saw an ex-parent and she said, oh, do you remember Rebecca? I said, of course I remember Rebecca. She said, oh, she's now at Oxford studying engineering. And she had to talk about somebody who'd inspired a love of maths. And she said, that was me. That was really quite nice. Mm. So I'd hope with Rebecca that love of learning came, and that she knew that you could always develop, you could always grow, you could always get better. And that, as I said, the day doesn't end at a question mark. A day doesn't end at a full stop. It always ends at a question mark. And that was a couple of years ago, probably just before COVID, that I saw her mum. That's what I tried to do, is to inspire and to know that, you know, we're in the business of trying to help people to do the very best that they can.
I guess that's really interesting. Actually, sort of touched on something that I've been thinking of in my sort of first headship. Something I've noticed is that, you know, occasionally we can have concerns around kind of attendance and you know, groups of children that aren't attending. Kind of connecting that to what you sort of said about opportunity and inspire. When you were a head, was there anything that you, I guess, came across or touched upon that you felt really worked to demonstrate to, I guess, either the pupils, but sometimes even their parents, the power of education?
Yeah, I think it's the values that you live by, really. I think it was Tim Brighouse said that as teachers, that or as educators, we create the weather. And I think as a head teacher, or as a teacher, everybody's a leader. And in that space, whether that's your own school, whether that is in your own classroom, you create that weather. And with you having that fantastic opportunity, that real privilege, is that I would always live by that. And I think it came from, particularly my second headship, where I think I learned the mistakes of my first headship, was really being the importance of the vision and the values you live by, particularly being a church school. It took quite a long time. It probably took about a year where we were really definite about what is it we want our children to leave with? What do we want to instill in them? And I think being a church school, that was really easier in a way, really, because I think we were very clear about the values that were already in place, but then we had a discussion about the values that we particularly wanted. So, for example, we came up with the idea of community, which I think is a Christian value, is a Greek word called koinonia, and I've probably said that completely wrong. But we lived by that. You know, how can we help ourselves? How can we help other people? We also had a value in terms of perseverance, which is a Christian value. So all of these values that we had, I think we had six of them in the end, all of these values just drip fed through everything that we did. The visions and the values which informed the vision, I think our vision was around foundations for life for all to flourish, and it was enshrined in the Bible. But the values that came from that reflected in everything we did. It reflected in the curriculum, it reflected in collective worship, it reflected in our conversations with parents every week. So they knew very clearly where we stood from and what we were doing as a community, rather than that vision and the values just being a piece of laminated paper on the wall. We really did live out those particular values on every day. I think Mary Meyer said something around that fairly recently, are your values laminated or are they lived out? Something like that. Mm-hmm. It really resonated, and that's what we tried to do. So I found that really worked, not being in a corporate way. I suppose companies have slogans, you know, Tesco mm-hmm. might say every little yeah. helps, and mm-hmm. we're not in the business, we were not a business, but people really knew that this was our school, this is what we have here. And I think that really helped, because people could know from the very littlest children, they had an understanding of what community or cocoonia meant, and knew what perseverance meant. So I found that was helpful.
And I guess when you first became a head teacher, did it feel different from other roles that you've had? You know, I know sometimes we talk about that kind of role being similar to being a police officer or being a priest, where they talk about them having a kind of social identity. And I know that when I started, I kind of considered the way that I walked or the way that I talked, and it felt that there should be a difference in the way that I'm presented. Did you kind of feel that? Did you get a sense that it was a very different role to the things that you'd done previously?
Yeah, I think engaging in study, and particularly engaging in the MPQH, it forces you to reflect a lot, and it forces you to reflect on, well, what type of leader do I want to be? And I think I spent quite a lot of time looking at different leaders, and whilst not trying to copy them, because I think it's important that you are your authentic self, I did look at one particular head teacher, somebody who was a deputy head teacher and then moved within the same school. And she completely transformed, but for the worse. We just thought that, yes, okay, the book stops with you, but she was completely different. And I don't know if she took on the persona of somebody else. But that was a real learning point for me, is to think, well, people should know who I am. They should know what my values are. And you do take on a different identity, because I remember one of my old head teachers saying to me, is when you're in charge of a school, and if you stop and think, it's quite scary as to how much you're responsible for. And some of those things can be quite mundane in terms of health and safety, asbestos, all of the things that people don't see that you are responsible for. But yes, it did take on a different social identity. And I think the thing I found a little bit different and difficult at first was moving from one school to another, where people knew you were very well respected, you were known by the community, and you had a class. So whilst being a deputy head teacher, there were certain duties and roles I would fulfill, but the vast majority of the time I was with my class, and I nurtured them, and we set up a relationship and an atmosphere and a culture in that particular classroom. And he found that was just gone, and it was really strange sitting around and thinking, who do I answer to now? And what do I do? And there is that level of suspicion, I suppose, when you go into a new school where people are nervous and maybe even reticent to change. And you walk into the staff room, and I can only say it's a little bit like a Western film where you walk into the bar and it's like Last Chance Saloon and conversation just stops dead. But I always went back to what I learned on MPQH, is what type of leader you want to be, you know, what type of person do you want to be? And I think I always thought that it was best to lead by example, not to ask other people to do things that you wouldn't do yourself. So for example, when people were watching or not watching, it's the things that you do. And I think culture happens when people are not watching. There's a lot written about culture. But you set the culture, you set the tone, as I mentioned what Tim Brighouse said, you set the weather. So, you know, do you do things like pick up litter? Do you do those things? I would expect people to do that. So I should expect that of myself as well. I also thought about the way that I spoke to people and my interactions with them. And I think I learned over time that it was really important that if people came to you with something, whether that be a problem, a complaint, an inquiry, they should almost know what they're getting back from you because they know what type of person you are. I think it becomes difficult when you work for somebody or you work for a particular manager or head teacher, but they don't quite know what they're going to get from you. So I think I always did try to do that. And it definitely took on a whole social identity, because until you do the role, you really don't realise how much responsibility you have. And also, I don't think you realise how lonely it could potentially be because you go from a situation where you may be surrounded by 30 young people with very diverse needs and personalities, to then all of a sudden, I'm in an office by myself.
And so I suppose, you know, I know that now you've come, you know, away from headship, and the role that you have involves working, you know, across schools and with different school leaders. So I suppose, do you sort of see, is there a common trait with the leaders that you've seen that are successful that they all have, or a skill or an attribute?
Yeah, I have the real privilege of really working as a system leader now, because I work with a variety of different schools of all shapes and sizes. And I think you do notice that everybody leads in slightly different ways and manages in slightly different ways. But I think the things what really stand out to me are those leaders who really know themselves well. I think those leaders who are very authentic, they don't necessarily try to take on a different persona. I think leaders who are successful are very clear about their own vision, their own values. I think they have a number of hallmarks for me. I think effective leaders are very good at communication, in terms of their written communication, their verbal communication. I've also noticed leaders who I think are particularly effective have courage. They have courage in the decisions that they make. So some head teachers are obviously scared of Ofsted. It can be a bit of a dirty word. But they have courage and conviction in terms of their decision making. What is right for their children? What is right for their schools? Are we doing this because it's something that Ofsted wants? Or actually, are we doing this because this is something that our children need? And I think as a head teacher, or even as a teacher, whatever role you have in a school, you will always have a view of how you think education should be. And I think it's really important that people understand your vision and values. However, your vision and values are going to be needed to be considered in light of the community that you're leading as well. I think those head teachers are very mindful of the schools that they lead and what is needed for that context. So what might be needed for a school in London may be very different to where I'm based in the north of England, a small rural area. It might be very different because diversity may be very different. But where I am is quite monocultural, really. In other parts of the country, then diversity is greater. So those head teachers are very clear as to what they need to do, how they need to lead. And I think the other thing what I noticed with head teachers is the ones who are really successful is they recognise their own limitations. So some head teachers will say, well, I've not been in the classroom for 15 years. How do I know what is the best way of teaching? How do I know lesson by lesson what is going to be the best way of teaching that? But those head teachers are quite visionary people. They have the vision, they have the ideas, they may be the problem solvers, but they are very good at then thinking about getting the right people in the right places. I think Alex Ferguson, as a football manager, whether you liked him or not, Sir Alex always said, I will always surround myself with brilliant people and surround myself with people I trust. I remember one particular head teacher, she had a fantastic track record of developing deputy head teachers. And she was a little bit like Sir Alex in that way. She would look them in the eye and she'd say, it was you. She always seemed to employ men, which was interesting. But she would point at these men and say, you're going to do all of the things that I can't do. And she would always pick people. And I can think of three particular deputies that worked for, have gone on and have very successful careers because they complemented each other. And I think those head teachers do really well because they know the captain of sailing the ship, but if somebody else is better at performing a particular duty on that ship. And I think I'm working with one particular school at the moment, and whilst it requires improvement, it's doing some fantastic things. That the head teacher is built a senior leadership team and created a real culture where they are given responsibility, they've given ownership, and they reflect and the debates on what they do, but it gives them the time and the freedom. So while some people might say, well, okay, NPQH is a bit far removed from the job, and I don't sit down today and think, oh, am I going to be an ethical leader, or am I going to use distributed leadership, or am I going to use this particular theory of leadership? I disagree with that, because some people may say, oh, well, I distribute leadership in my school, but they might not actually understand what it means. And they may not understand what the advantages of, say, distributed leadership are and what the disadvantages are. So I think head teachers also have their own personalities, which I think is important. Head teachers, you know, bring that to the job. And I think that's important as well, you know, particularly with communication and dealing with people and measuring conflict. I think one of the biggest things of all is humility, is there's people who are humble. I always felt myself, if I was getting most things right, somebody once said to me, improvement advice, said, look, Brian, if you're getting seven out of 10 things right, then you're probably doing okay. Mm. But when you are getting things wrong, then reflect on that and learn from that. And don't be afraid to apologize just because you are the senior leader, because you are the head teacher. It doesn't mean to say you are right all of the time. And I think probably finally on that score is culture. Is what culture do we create in schools? There's a little saying, and I think there's some truth in it really, is if you really want to see what people are like, look at how they treat waiters, look how they treat waitresses, maybe in the school level, how do they treat the midday supervisors or lunchtime staff? How do they treat the cleaners? And I don't think, you know, I think there's quite an element of truth in that.
Yeah. And it was interesting sort of hearing you say that, you know, a degree to which you lead a school or the way that you look to shape it can be influenced by your own kind of view on education. For you, how has that, I guess, developed as you've come away from headship and you've got a role where your lens, I guess, is a lot wider, isn't it? Because you're looking across a lot more schools and you're probably privy to a lot more information than you were as the head of one school. So how, I suppose, has your perspective on I suppose, the role of education sort of developed across your career?
I think when you're in one school, you can potentially become sort of very insular and you can get trapped in a little bit of a bubble and you're juggling a lot of things. I think working across a lot of schools is you get the benefits of comparison, and whilst you'd never go into a school and overtly compare them or mention particular schools, you do get a broader view. I've also had the benefit of working in higher education previously. I've also had the benefit of inspection work as well. So that really broadened your perspective. And I think because of those experiences, you get a view of what works and what doesn't work, what strategies work, what strategies don't work in particular. And I think you get to see the bigger picture, particularly when you've done inspection work, and you understand some of the decisions, you know, behind and some of the thinking. And I think recently speaking to somebody who's transitioned from headship into school improvement work, she said she couldn't necessarily see why the local authority were doing certain things or why decisions were made or why there was a particular focus on things. But now that she steps into school improvement work, she can understand why those particular aspects have been done. So it does broaden your knowledge more greatly in terms of understanding the education world. Maybe understanding some of the political side of education, whereas when I found I was a head teacher, I did interact with other head teachers, but you get so bogged down with what other people are doing, with what you're doing in your own school, and not necessarily what other people are doing. So I think it just gives you that broader perspective, and I think, you know, somebody said to me recently, if a school, for example, goes through an inspection and there may be one thing an inspector picks up on, and it can become very delicate, become very sensitive, and emotions can be charged. Whereas I've seen that quite a few times and can bring that reassurance and calm, you know, to head teachers in that respect. So I think it's a real privilege to be able to work across a number of schools and being able to see the bigger picture and try to then use those key messages and distill that down. I don't think what I was ever very good at really as a head teacher was understanding the national agenda, whereas I think now, probably with age, probably getting a bit more cynical and a bit more political, is tend to look at the national agenda even more and then try to translate that to schools. I'm not sure that answers that.
Do you think there's anything that schools are either getting wrong in the way that they're delivering education or going about education? Or do you think there's something that needs to be kind of better communicated to schools from the layer above that you think has maybe been missing?
I don't know. I don't know if there's anything inherently wrong with what schools do. I mean, schools are still emerging, and I think, in my own opinion, will be for a long time. From COVID, schools have had an enormous amount of pressure put on them because of COVID, and whether we can debate whether COVID is a severe or non-severe disease, the one thing we can underestimate is the impact it's had on children and the legacy of that will last for a long time. I think one of the things is going back to what I referred to a little earlier is education's a political football. And I suppose at times, because of the high stakes nature of education, that the accountability regime, Ofsted probably more than SIAMS, has a big impact. And when you hear leaders saying, well, this is what Ofsted wants, then that is a bit of a concern. But I can understand where that comes from, because I suppose when you and I were at school, Ofsted were probably in their very early days, or if we maybe did this interview 40, 50 years ago, if you saw a HMI in your career, you were probably quite unlucky. So I think schools worrying about inspection rather than focusing on what the real needs are of their schools can be prohibitive at times. But I think on the whole, nobody goes into a job to do a bad job. I think it's just sometimes they need support and guidance, and maybe that's, you know, why school improvement advisors come in, or the value of coaching comes in, because unlike, I suppose, medical careers, they get clinical supervision. There is nothing of that in education in terms of head teachers, and it's such a big role to undertake.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I think this is one of those things we could talk about all day, and, you know, kind of find your insights fascinating, but we are kind of coming to sort of an end of our chat. I mean, the last thing I'd maybe ask you is, I think, you know, it'd be really hard to define intelligence, but if you could look at all the pupils and all the adults that you've worked with over your career, and you could look at them in a snapshot, would there be one kind of key trait you would want them all to kind of have that you think would support them in living, you know, a successful or happy life, I suppose?
I think, as I alluded to before, the power of education, I think intelligence can have many different definitions. But for me, I think it's the ability to learn, and whether that's the Ofsted definition of knowing more, being able to do more and remember more, and of all of those things. But I think the ability to learn and the desire to want to learn and to improve is really important. But I think in whatever education throws up for the future, is to develop an intelligence so that you can solve problems and recognize problems and become solution focused, because we don't know what the jobs of the future will be. But if you have the ability to learn and the desire to learn, and you can see the value of learning, then you can apply that to whatever it is. So in the future, children will have to solve varying problems, whether that be financial or whether that might be to do with the planet. That's how I would define intelligence, is the ability to learn, to solve. But also emotional intelligence is really important as well. What sits beneath the iceberg, as it's called, in terms of communication and empathy, are really important.
Brilliant. Well, great. Thank you very much for chatting to me, Brian.
That's a pleasure. I hope it was helpful.